Welcome to the Save Your Marriage podcast, dedicated to all the men and women out there who are going through marital problems and want to save their marriages. Here, we give you tools, perspectives, and insight into how to save your marriage and have a thriving marriage. This podcast is sponsored by The Fortified Spouse. And now, here's your host, Arturo Henriquez.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode. Thank you very much for listening. I just want to invite all the men and women out there to book a private complimentary call with me. We will talk about your particular situation in private and give you lots of guidance and put you on the path to restoring and saving your marriage. Just go to www.fortifiedspouse.com/call. That's C-A-L-L.
So have you noticed how our emotions have become this kind of primary mover culture that people are always making decisions based on how they feel? And I know this has happened throughout our lives. I've talked with people who tell me about how they've been motivated by their emotions. Maybe they didn't decide to work out that morning because they didn't feel like it. They just didn't feel good, or how they decided to, you know, give up on a job because it didn't excite them anymore. And sometimes people tell me about all these ways that their emotions have created their lives. What I've noticed is that those same emotions are part of our process when we're working on saving a marriage. But the problem is that people end up making decisions based on those emotions, not dealing with like a spouse's emotions, but using their emotions as the primary driver, the primary mover, to let their emotions guide their process on saving their marriage. You know, just yesterday, I was talking with a person who had been working on saving his marriage, and I said, how's it going? You know, sending those one-way texts, how's that going? And he said, well, you know, I haven't done that lately. And I said, well, why not? Because we talked about that last week, and you had that in your plan. Why didn't you do that this week? And he said, you know, I just didn't feel up to it. I was kind of frustrated with her, and I was frustrated with the process, and so I just didn't do it. So then I asked him, how did it go when you were asking on those tag-alongs? And he said, I didn't do that either. I said, well, why didn't you do the tag-alongs? That's in your plan as well. And he gave me the same reasons. Basically, he told me in those few moments that all of the actions that he had decided to take, he didn't end up taking them because of how he felt in that moment in his emotional life. A couple of days ago, I was talking to somebody who told me that she was pretty much giving up on the process. She'd been frustrated. She'd been aggravated. She was upset and angry with her spouse. And because of those emotions, she told me that she realized that those emotions were telling her something, that those emotions were letting her know that she ought not to do this. They were letting her know that this marriage was not meant to be. You see what both of these people were doing? They were, you know, making decisions based on the emotions that they were having in a specific moment. And this is where we get into problems, because our emotions aren't a consistent and constant kind of thing in our lives. Emotions come and go. And so let's go back to that whole idea of how we make our decisions in life. Generally, when I'm looking at, say, my exercise routine, I've chosen how it's going to happen through the week. I know which days I'm going to be playing soccer. I know which days I'm going to be running. I know which days I'm going to be going to the gym. And I know which days are going to be recovery days. I know these days and I know these places. And you know how I know these things other than memory is that they're in my schedule and they have reminders. And so whenever I get a reminder that it's time to go to the gym or time to, you know, play soccer or go running, I may not feel like it, right? I may not feel up to it. I may feel tired of the process. Or maybe I'll look at the weather and say, no, it's too hot outside or too cold. Or I may look at the time and say it's too late or it's too early and I don't have the energy for that. That's an emotional state. However, it's on my calendar. And so with rare exception, I go do it. The same with my routine at home, the same with my routine at work. You know, when I get home from work, I usually take out the dogs. You know, I go for a walk with a dog, regardless of whether I'm up to it or not. The only thing that really, you know, holds us back is the weather, right? If it's really, really bad weather. But other than that, we go take a walk. Because here's what I've realized. Some days I just don't quite feel up to it. But by the time I've started walking, I feel up to it. I feel good at the end of it. It never fails, whether I'm playing soccer or running or going to the gym or walking the dog or going to meetings, whatever I'm doing that I maybe not want to do in that moment. Once I start doing it, and obviously when I finished, I feel amazing. You see, what I've decided to do is disregard how I'm feeling emotionally in the moment. Now, let me make a distinguishing feature here. Sometimes I realize that my body is not recovered. Maybe I did something tough. Maybe I did it, you know, playing soccer or running, and I'm really tired. And so in the mornings, I do check to make sure, you know, that I am physically up to it. If not, then I'm going to do damage to myself. But other than that, if there are physiological reasons that I should not do it, then I don't do it. And there are realistic reasons why you might do the same, you know, with your marriage. You may decide at this point something has changed. Notice I said decide that something has changed. And we'll come back to that word in a moment because it is a decision, right? But other than that, I try to set aside the emotions of the moment. And you should too, as it relates to saving your marriage. And here's why. When you make decisions based on an emotion, it assumes that one, they are real, two, that they are correct, and three, that they are accurate. So let me ask you a couple of questions. When I say, what's your emotions? Where do your emotions come from? What are they? I mean, when you get down to it, what is an emotion? And I've asked a lot of people that, and they generally can't quite answer that. They say, well, you know, it's how I feel. And when I delve a little deeper, what do you mean, how you feel? How do you decide that? And what they realize is that while emotions are there, I mean, I can tell if I'm having an emotional reaction, telling you where they're coming from and why they're there is a little bit more difficult. Because emotions aren't so much real as they are ephemeral. They come and go. In fact, in the same moment, you can go from one emotion to the other. You may be very upset with somebody, and then they come and look at you and apologize, and suddenly you're very connected with that person. Your emotions instantly have changed. Nothing has changed really in the world, maybe a little communication difference, but nothing really has changed. And yet everything has changed emotionally. The same thing can happen throughout our lives. One moment we're upset about something, a few minutes later we've been distracted by something else, and we don't even remember it. You see, we humans often get locked into our own emotional state without realizing that that emotional state changes very, very frequently. We tend not to notice how frequently it changes. Have you ever noticed when you get up on the wrong side of the bed, you know, you get up, you're angry about something, upset about something, and you're stomping around, and then you get your day started, and something catches your eyes, and maybe, you know, you meditate, or you read, or take a walk, or read some story that uplifts you, and suddenly you forgot about the fact that that morning, you were upset. You see, your emotions changed, even though perhaps not much in your circumstances has really changed. So your emotions are not necessarily real. I'm not saying that you don't have emotions. I'm just saying that they are more ephemeral than not. The second is, are they correct? Well, our emotions are really weird interplay of lots of things within our body, within our mind, within our brain. And they mostly come from lots of messages and assumptions and meaning that we've put to our experiences throughout most of our lives. And so two people might have a very different emotional response to the same event. All we have to do is look at politics, depending on where you are on the spectrum. Let's say a decision is made and you have an emotional response, and somebody else on the other end of the spectrum has an exactly diametrically different emotional response to yours. Which one is correct? Which one is right? Well, it's coming from your assumptions and your viewpoints right now. It's not that emotions are right or wrong. I'm not suggesting that there are wrong emotions. There are just emotions. They're not necessarily right emotions. They're just emotions. Sometimes we criticize people that they're not feeling what they should be feeling in a particular situation. And yet we're putting our assumptions on them. So emotions aren't necessarily correct either. It's not a matter of right and wrong, or are they accurate or not accurate. And that depends, right? Accurate feelings assumes that there is some fair portrayal of something. Sometimes I'll watch people and somebody will, you know, two people in the same thing, and one person, somebody will have an anger response of, say, a level 2 out of 10. The other will have a response to, say, a level of 8 out of 10. Something's going on. Some risk is going on. It's the same situation going on. But which one is accurate? Which one matches what's happened? You know, it's the same response, but one is a lot bigger than the other. Now, have you ever watched two parents disagree on what to do about their child's misbehavior? Maybe that child did something and one thinks it's kind of funny and kind of cute, and the other thinks it's a horrible, disrespectful act that needs punishment. Again, which is right? Which is accurate? They're having an emotional response. One is lighthearted, the other is angry. Which is right and which is accurate? Maybe even it's a matter of degrees. Maybe both of them recognize that the child did something wrong. The one parent thinks that they deserve a punishment of 6 months in the room because they're so angry about it. And the other thinks that maybe just a good talking would suffice because they're frustrated with the child, but think that maybe something can shift just in that conversation. Again, which is accurate? Which one is correct? You see, our emotional life has so many different factors to it. First, it shifts along the way. Second, we don't even know where they come from necessarily. And third, they're not necessarily accurate to what's going on. They're not necessarily an accurate portrayal of what we're facing. Sometimes people tell me that they just have to live your life based on your emotions, that you have to trust your gut, they tell me. And I'll tell you, there's a group of people that I know that do live their lives fully by their emotions. You know who they are? They're three-year-olds. Three-year-olds have no capacity of reasoning through it. So whatever they're feeling in that moment is the absolute feeling at that time. And that's it. In fact, that's one of my concerns when people start talking about you've got to live in the moment. Because if they're living in the emotional moment, they're living like a three-year-old. A three-year-old assumes that if they've got something they love, they will have that item for the rest of their lives and they're happy. At the same time, a three-year-old who can't get what they want feels like they're going to be devastated for the rest of their lives. And they throw a fit. And that tends to be the danger if we take that mindset into adulthood or take that into maybe decision-making later on in life. We get into trouble because one of the things about adult maturity is that we set aside that momentary emotion, those momentary emotions when it comes to major decisions. And when we don't, we usually pay the price for it. Let's say on a whim, on a beautiful day outside, you decide that you would love to take a drive in a convertible. And so you go to the dealership and there's that one convertible. You can't afford it though. Maybe you can get a loan for it, but you can't afford it. But wow, that would be so cool. And you think about all the emotional states that you would have if you had that convertible. But if you made that decision, you would create financial problems for yourself, your family. You might have enough money, but that wouldn't matter. For lots of people, that would make a serious financial crisis for them. You see, an adult mature decision is to say, you know what? Yeah, that might create an emotional impact in my life, but it's not worth it. I have to make a decision another way. Which brings us back to that word decide. You'll notice that decide rhymes with some other words like germicide or fungicide. You remember that side? That side means to kill away. And so when we decide something, we cut that option away. So when I talk with people about how they want to make a decision about their marriage, I push them to think about that word, to decide. It's not about how they feel at the moment. It's what they decide to do. It's not how they've been feeling. It's their decision about that. just generally, that puts us to a different place because then we can compare two very important ideas, emotion versus commitment. When we meet somebody and fall in love, we're full of emotions. We have that rush of adrenaline and a rush of infatuation and that rush of good feelings. That's what happens at the beginning of those relationships. And we fall in love with that emotional space. But you'll notice in a wedding, and this is key, it's not that you're promising to be with someone as long as you have that emotional life. You're actually promising to be there as long as you're alive. You've made a shift from the emotions to the commitment. When I reflect with people about those marriage vows, I remind them of what they promised to be together through all the days, the good days and the bad days, the sick days, the healthy days, the rich days, the poor days. There's not a lot left out of these days, and we commit to that. We make a commitment to that regardless of how we choose emotionally to feel at that time. I believe that a commitment is what you decide to, you know, what you choose to do when you're feeling a certain way, even when you're no longer going to be feeling that way in the future. You're still committed to that space. And so part of what we're doing in a wedding is announcing to the world that we've committed to joining together and committed to working through the tough times together. And that's where we begin to draw the distinction. Anybody who enters into a marriage feeling that they're going to feel that overwhelming emotion, that overwhelming feeling for the other person is mistaken. The people who go into a wedding recognizing that the feelings they have now will change and mutate along the way, those are the successful ones. That doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean anything's wrong. It just means that people grow into something new. Emotions change. Emotions move around. And what really is behind all that is commitment. We create a commitment based on the idea that we can move forward. We can move forward and work through the difficult times versus assuming that the emotions will always be there. Emotions come and go, hourly, even momentarily. Emotions can switch and change. And so the difference between emotions and decisions are that sometimes we decide to wait out our emotions based on the commitments that we've made. Sometimes I've talked with people who tell me that they are just ready to give up. And I talk with them a week later and they don't remember that a week before they were ready to give up because their emotions have changed. And we don't always remember our emotions along the way. If I asked you now how you were feeling last Monday, you may or may not be able to tell me without looking at your calendar, with no reminders of what happened last Monday. You may not be able to tell me. If I asked you to tell me what happened or how you felt, let's say 18 days ago, you'd probably struggle with that. If I asked you how you felt a year ago, you definitely would struggle with telling me your emotions at that moment 5 years ago. You definitely will struggle with how you feel. If I ask you how you're going to feel next week, you're actually going to guess how you're going to feel next week, next month, next year. You'll be guessing how you'll feel in 5 years or 10 years. You'll be guessing because you're trying to figure out how you felt or how you're going to feel based on where you feel now. And that's likely going to change. Many times I find that all I have to do is wait out my emotions to let them change on their own to get to a better place. And so part of our task when we've made a commitment is to decide to move through the emotional states, to wait out those emotions, knowing that the tough moments will pass. But here's an important distinction. You need to pay attention to your spouse's emotions because they are responding to them. Emotional intelligence at its heart is not getting so wrapped up in your emotions, not making decisions based on your emotional state. But emotional intelligence has another part that you're aware and responding to the other person's emotions. You don't have to get suckered by your own emotions, but you recognize that others are acting upon their emotions. So part of emotional intelligence is being able to pay attention to your spouse's emotions, knowing that they're responding to those and taking your own emotions a little bit more lightly. In fact, one way of making sure that you don't let your emotions guide this process is to take your own emotions so lightly and take your spouse's emotions very seriously. To not pay so much attention to how you're feeling in the moment, but to recognize that how your spouse is feeling often feels very legitimate to them and needs your understanding and your ability to watch how they move through that emotional space. Don't let emotions fool you. They change. Don't get suckered into feeling that how you're feeling now will be how you feel in the future. But do recognize, and this is key, that the emotional life of your spouse may be the pace and the place that you need to move through as you work to save your marriage. Thank you for listening. Now, I want to introduce you to the Fortified Spouse program that has helped thousands of women and men just like you save their marriages with an 85% success rate. It is based on four fundamental pillars. One, gain the tools to reconnect with your spouse. Two, understand the differences between men and women so we can appreciate and be more empathetic with our spouse. Three, learn how to gain inner confidence so we are no longer codependent on our spouse. And four, deal with our insecurities and triggers so we are more emotionally in control and not as easily triggered. If you're interested in learning more about these tools to immediately stabilize the marriage and postpone and delay the divorce or separation or win your spouse back from an affair, then go to www.fortifiedspouse.com and enroll in the program. It is going to change your life. It is going to make you the best version of you, and it has the highest probability of saving your marriage.
You have been listening to the Save Your Marriage podcast for men and women. For further information, visit The Fortified Spouse at www.fortifiedspouse.com. Thank you.